This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, new concerns about U.S. air safety. Political change takes hold in Turkey. Tastes change in the fast food industry.
The food is tailored, it can be customized, it's still quick, and also has this perception of being much higher quality.
We'll hear about a new song from a very popular American female singer. These stories are more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. American travelers may have good reason to worry about air safety. The top inspector for the agency protecting travelers says he is deeply concerned about glaring security lapses. U.S. lawmakers heard testimony Tuesday following revelations that the Transportation Security Administration failed to identify 73 workers with links to terrorism and also failed to detect simulated weapons and other dangerous items in 96% of tests conducted at airport screening checkpoints. VOA's Michael Bowman reports from Capitol Hill.
14 years after the terrorist attacks of September 11th, serious questions are being raised about U.S. aviation security and whether the TSA, created after 9/11, is fulfilling its responsibility to protect air travelers. Homeland Security Inspector General John Roth told a Senate panel his team has uncovered what he called significant vulnerabilities in the TSA's conduct of airport screening, among other shortcomings.
TSA cannot afford to miss a single genuine threat without potentially catastrophic consequences. Yet, a terrorist only needs to get it right once.
Revelations that aviation vulnerabilities remain have alarmed lawmakers like Senator Ron Johnson.
TSA screens nearly 2 million passengers each day. 2 million passengers each day, nearly 660 million every year. That is an enormous challenge and task.
Whistleblowers pinpointed problems they have witnessed, including inattention to a large list of passengers approved for rapid TSA screening at U.S. airports. Rebecca Roaring supervises the TSA at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport.
TSA is handing out pre-check status like Halloween candy in an effort to expedite passengers as quickly as possible, despite self-admitted security gaps that are being created by the process.
Airplanes are also vulnerable to easily concealed explosive devices, according to Federal Air Marshal Robert McLean.
If a terrorist group puts thought into it, it's relatively easy to sneak small bombs into jets in order to blow up at high altitude.
Although recent aviation terrorist plots have been foiled, if things do not change at TSA, lawmakers worry it is only a matter of time before one succeeds. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
Social media is reacting to the air travel worries. Here's VOA's Michael Lippin with details on what our audience is saying.
Thanks, Ray. One report that got attention on Twitter today was from U.S. news website Breitbart.com. Its report focuses on a revelation that the people who recently tested TSA security procedures by successfully smuggling fake weapons and explosives past TSA agents were government auditors, not specialized undercover agents. That revelation came from the Department of Homeland Security Inspector General John Roth, who spoke today at a Senate hearing. It's an indication that skirting TSA security procedures at U.S. airports may not be as difficult as it should be. Another TSA story doing well on Twitter today is from U.S. TV network Fox News. Its report is headlined, "TSA Whistleblowers Describe Security Concerns and a TSA Culture of Fear and Distrust." The Fox News article looks at another part of the Senate hearing in which TSA whistleblowers, that is, employees publicly criticizing the TSA, spoke about the problems that have led to low morale in their agency. One of those whistleblowers told the hearing that she believes the TSA's leadership is composed of too many former commercial airline executives who place more emphasis on customer service and reducing passenger wait times than on security and detection rates. I also spotted an in-depth report from the Washington Examiner news site on Twitter. The Examiner says that during the Senate hearing, one senator asked the Homeland Security Inspector General what the TSA is doing well. Roth said it was a good thing that many TSA employees have stepped forward as whistleblowers to highlight problems at the agency. He also gave credit to what he said were some TSA employees who have been doing their best every day to ensure passenger safety. Ray, back to you.
Thanks, Michael. You can follow him on Twitter. His handle is at Michael_Lipin. That's L-I-P-I-N. Turkey's government is not what it used to be. In fact, a major change is taking shape since President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's AK ruling party failed to retain its majority last weekend in parliamentary elections, and a pro-Kurdish party gained seats for the first time. VOA's Jeffrey Young spoke with Yoham Kaya, chairman of the Turkish Research Institute called UKAM, for some perspective.
First, if you could, describe the impact of the Kurdish party HDP getting 13.1% of the vote and, for the first time, seats in parliament. How does that victory impact the order of things in Ankara?
Well, first of all, the victory had a great impact on Turkish politics because it very much ended AKP's 12-year one-party rule. So that was really the main thing. It's not just the amount of the votes that the Kurdish party won. It was the impact it had, actually. And also, it increased its voting base almost 100%. It was 6.5% in the previous elections. And in this election, it increased to 13%, which is doubling its voting base, actually.
Prime Minister Erdogan's AKP party failed to get a clear majority in the elections and now apparently must form a coalition. What parties would be his likely coalition partners, and does this affect the AKP's agenda?
Of course, it definitely affects its agenda because it's not going to be as free as it was in the past to do whatever it wanted to do. The Nationalist Party, the Turkish Nationalist Movement Party closed the doors to have a coalition with AKP, which was the first choice for AKP. Now the Republican Party, which is a secular leftist party, wanted to they talk about the possibility of the coalition, but these are very different two parties, and because of the corruption allegations and all things happening in 12 years, it's going to be a very difficult coalition. It's not a coalition that we would have in the 1990s in Turkey because of all these tensions and polarization and allegations about the government. It's going to be a tough one.
İlham Kaya is the chair for UKAM, a research institute in Istanbul. I'm Jeffrey Young, VOA News.
Fast food tastes are changing. We'll tell you how. Stay with us.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Ray Kugel. VOA East Asia editor Colin Lovett continues his visit to Southeast Asia. He's currently in the Cambodian capital And earlier, my colleague Sarah Williams caught up with him by telephone.
So, Colin, I understand you are now in Phnom Penh, and I believe this is not your first visit to the city.
It certainly isn't. The last time I was here, though, was 1998, which is, I guess 16 years ago. And the first thing I noticed when I got off the plane and started on the taxi into the city was all the cars on the street. When I was here in 98, the country was less than 4 or 5 years removed from a civil war that had devastated it for 35 years. And there was hardly any cars on the streets anywhere. The only cars you ever saw were from NGOs, the UN, embassies, and government officials. Everyone else was on motos. There's still a lot of motos in this town. They're a convenient way of getting around, but there's a lot more cars now. And quite frankly, the development in the city is going through the roof. It's looking more like Bangkok than it is looking like Phnom Penh anymore.
So what have been some of your activities while you've been there?
Well, with my Khmer service colleagues, one of them, a new veteran, he and I did a story that was put out on the web today about the lack of Chinese cultural and linguistic influence here in Cambodia, despite China's very, very close ties, both political and economic, with the Hun Sen government. China's ties with Cambodia are at an all-time high right now, both on the economic front. China is one of the major investors. Chinese tourists make up the second largest number of foreign visitors to Cambodia. On the other side of the ledger, Cambodia has been very, very supportive of China's policies, particularly its controversial policies in the South China Sea, in ASEAN forums. And China has made a concerted effort to try to expand its cultural and linguistic influence here, opening up Chinese language schools, supporting cultural institutions. And there's very little sign of it actually taking traction at this point.
How large a Chinese presence, a Chinese population, is there in Phnom Penh?
Well, there's Khmer Chinese. Just like throughout Southeast Asia, there's Chinese communities and Chinese families who have been here for a long time. Most of them in Cambodia have completely assimilated into the Cambodian culture. They've adopted Cambodian names. They intermarry with Khmer quite frequently. They speak Khmer. They don't tend to speak either Mandarin or Cantonese. So there's not a large Chinese population. Ethnically Chinese, yes, and it's very small, but they're not culturally Chinese. They're culturally Cambodian.
While on your trip there, do you intend to visit any of the sites that are linked to Cambodia's the time of the Khmer Rouge, the genocide?
Tomorrow I plan on swinging past Tuas Lung Prison Museum, which is where a man named Duc, who has been convicted by the tribunal, the UN Joint Tribunal, ran a torture prison, killed almost 30,000 people in there. They've turned it into a genocide museum here. And when I first came 20 years ago, or nearly 20 years ago, it was just an empty shell with some pictures on the wall. I'm curious to see what it looks like now.
All right. All right. Thanks very much, Colin.
You're welcome, Sarah.
VOA East Asia editor Colin Lovett reporting from Phnom Penh, Cambodia. For you fans of hamburgers and French fries, listen up. Times are changing. Fast food giants are facing demanding customers who want more healthy food that can be tailored to individual tastes. Well, what about staying home and doing it yourself? Forget it. Let's face it, people like to go out and eat. So the fast food industry is responding to consumers who now want something different. Here's VOA's Michael Sullivan.
The fast food industry started on historic Route 66 in San Bernardino, California, where the McDonald brothers opened a restaurant in 1940. They would later streamline their operation to focus on burgers and fries, sold at high volume and for a low price. A business acquaintance named Ray Kroc helped them expand their franchise and later bought them out, and he created a worldwide empire. A privately run museum on the site of that first McDonald's celebrated the company's 75th anniversary, as museum owner Albert Okura told visitors about the brothers' big idea.
They had hamburgers and french fries, meat and potatoes. They had the right food at the right time in the history of America.
It was fast and it was cheap. Tommy Bliss came often in those early days when this was a popular hangout for the local teenagers.
Me and all the hot girls were hanging around McDonald's, and all the hot cars were cruising around it.
Young people are likely to hang out at other restaurants today, like Chipotle. The growing Mexican food chain advertises its healthful ingredients. A Chipotle outlet in Washington, D.C. draws customers like Yao O'Dompton.
I mean, I just eat healthy, and I like, you know, health and wellness is very important to me.
Chipotle is part of a new segment of fast casual restaurants, says industry analyst Sean Height of the University of Southern California.
Chipotle, Panera, Noodles and Company. And what makes them different from fast food is that the food is tailored, it could be customized, it's still quick, and also has this perception of being much higher quality.
Burgers made with Angus beef, with or without tomato, or a vegetarian sandwich with a portobello mushroom. That's the formula of Shake Shack, a New York hot dog and burger joint that had its initial public offering this year. Height says these new chains cater to millennials, young people who became adults around the year 2000.
Recent statistics over the last 4 years have shown that millennials, on average, have been increasing their consumption of fast casual by 5% annually, whereas their consumption of fast food has remained largely flat.
McDonald's is facing falling profits and is coping with fallout of news last year that its Chinese supplier provided the company with expired meat. The scandal also tarnished Yum! Brands outlets such as KFC. McDonald's has diversified its menu to include more healthful items. It is also exploring automation to make its food more customizable. And in the face of worker demands for higher wages, may use automation to reduce its labor costs. Industry analysts say the fast food giants need to innovate to keep pace with a changing business landscape and changing tastes. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Action Reaction looks at famous film facts.
Pretty Woman made Julia Roberts a star, but it was Molly Ringwald who was first offered Roberts' role and turned it down. Ringwald was already a star at the time, part of the 1980s Brat Pack. The modern movie version of Jane Austen's novel Emma celebrates its 20th anniversary this year. Clueless created one of Hollywood's most memorable characters, Cher Horowitz, played by Alicia Silverstone. But the role was first offered to Sarah Michelle Gellar, who went on to become TV's Buffy the Vampire Slayer just 2 years later. It's hard to imagine anyone other than actor Tom Hanks as Forrest Gump, but he wasn't their first choice, not even second or third. John Travolta was the favorite, followed by Bill Murray and Chevy Chase. Travolta has admitted that saying no to the part was a mistake. The same year, though, Travolta starred in another blockbuster movie, Pulp Fiction. For VOA's Action Reaction, I'm Lisa Vora.
A big lawn gets a big makeover. That story coming up.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
America's front yard is getting a much-needed overhaul. Almost 2 kilometers of lawn stretch from the U.S. Capitol to the Washington Monument here in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. But the expanse of grass known as the National Mall took a beating over the years. Now, workers are in the middle of restoring the lush green carpet that fronts some of Washington's best-known sites. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
Caring for America's front yard is a man who knows his grass.
The stick flat blade is tall fescue.
Caring for America's front yard is a man who knows his grass.
The stick flat blade is tall fescue.
After 20 years tending golf courses, Michael Stackowitz now manages some of the best known turf in the world.
It's really cool to work on a piece of property that so many people around the world can relate to.
More than 25 million people visit the mall each year. Concerts, festivals, and rallies. But over the years, all those feet have impressed us with the density of brick.
And I'm having a hard time breaking it. That is an indication of how brick-like it is.
Only weeds could thrive in the rock-hard soil.
The whole mall had sunk to a pretty sorry state. But a $45 million renovation is rebuilding it, literally from the ground up. The tough old soil had to go, to be replaced with something like you'd find under a professional baseball field. Even the grass itself is getting an upgrade, with the latest varieties from university researchers.
It being the most heavily trafficked piece of turf in the world, we're trying to find the most traffic resistant, the toughest turf that we can.
Workers are also installing cisterns that will capture nearly 4 million liters of rainwater. Stackowitz says they will help reduce pollution during heavy storms.
Any water that goes into a storm sewer in D.C., during a big event, if that water, that storm sewer gets overwhelmed, will end up in the Potomac River along with regular sewage.
The underground cisterns buried here will keep that water out of the sewers and store it to water the lawn. But digging up such a huge stretch of ground has been a complicated task.
At least a century's worth of wiring and piping and tunneling underneath them all.
They can identify almost all of it, but this high voltage conduit is a mystery.
No idea whose it is.
So they've had to prop it up and work around it. Well, the first part's finished, and when the whole project's done, the whole mall is going to look like this. And that's expected to be in time for the next presidential inauguration in January of 2017. Steve Barragona, VOA News. On the National Mall.
Singer Kelly Clarkson is making news again, proving she's got real staying power. In fact, you might say she's invincible. Here's VOA's David Byrd and Larry London to explain.
She won the very first American Idol, and now Kelly Clarkson has a new song that's climbing the charts. It's called Invincible. It's from her new CD, Piece by Piece, and Larry London joins me to talk about this tune. Larry,
well,
this is another anthem from Kelly Clarkson, I guess.
She's very good at creating music that people can relate to and connect with, and that's one of the keys to her success over the years. And the new album is great, Piece by Piece. She took an off-road for a little bit, did some country music, but she's kind of back in the main lane of the pop world, and just finished off with a Heartbeat song, which was her 16th top 40 single. And so the new song, Invincible, as you mentioned, it's an inspirational song. It's a very happy, positive song. And Kelly's in a very positive place right now, despite all of the criticism that she's been undergoing recently because of her weight gain. And so she's okay. She's happy with herself. She says, I love myself, and I am invincible, which is what this song kind of reflects and represents.
You know I was broke down. I hit the ground. I was crying out, I couldn't make no sound. No one hears the silent tears collecting. You know I had lost hope, I was all alone. Never been so low till you came along. Teacher, I feel the dots connecting.
Now she had a baby, right? That's
yeah.
Why she had some weight gain.
Well, she's always battled weight. That's been a problem that she's dealt with her entire life. She admits openly that the weight issues have always been troublesome for her. She did drop a few pounds a number of years ago, but since the birth of River Rose, it has not been a very easy thing for her to get rid of the weight. But she's happy with herself, as she said. In fact, she said after she finishes her current tour, she's going to try and get pregnant again. She wants to have another baby by the end of this year. She wants to be pregnant.
And this song talks about, you know, issues like overcoming abuse. The video for it has different women in different scenarios. One woman is in a wheelchair. One woman is, like, in an abusive situation, you know, and it's different ethnicities, different races, et cetera. And is Kelly trying to broaden her appeal with the video, or what exactly is she doing there?
Well, that's an interesting question, David. Kelly, you know, currently appeals to quite a diverse group of people to begin with. They all like her and relate to her. She's a person who's overcome a number of obstacles, as we mentioned a little while ago. She grew up in a very small town in Texas, and they weren't very wealthy. Mom was an English teacher. And so, you know, she's considers herself to be the average kind of person. She doesn't look at herself as a star. She thinks her music is very relatable, and she's very reachable. She's very reachable. She's not kind of up on a perch or anything like that. She wants to be an everybody's person, and I think she comes across that way. You really like Kelly. She's genuine with everything she does. 25 million sales. She's won so many awards. including 12 Billboard Music Awards. So, you know, she's got the appeal that is necessary to make it in the music business these days. And the new song is doing very well. She performed it for the first time on television at the Billboard Award show.
All right, that's VOA's Larry London. We'd love to hear what you think about this. You can go on to our Facebook page. That's VOA Music. It's facebook.com/VOA-music. You can leave your comments there. Larry also hosts VOA's Border Crossings, which has its own Facebook page. You can contact him there. Maybe he'll play Kelly Clarkson's Invincible.
We'd love to do it.
A second attempt by the U.S. space agency NASA to test a new parachute system designed to land larger spacecraft on Mars failed. A saucer-shaped unmanned vehicle splashed down in the Pacific Ocean hours after it was carried into the edge of space by a giant helium balloon from U.S. military facility on the Hawaiian island of Kauai. NASA says a large 30-foot diameter parachute deployed but failed to inflate. That's it for this edition of International Edition. You can get lots more information, words, pictures, and video on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Addressing climate change is a key priority for the Obama administration. And so it is no surprise that U.S. global leadership on climate extends to one of the most fragile regions in the world, the Arctic. As the new chair of the Arctic Council, the United States has made cooperation to reduce emissions, protection of communities from the impacts of climate change, and the building of foundational climate science key pillars of its agenda. Every nation that cares about the future of the Arctic has to be a leader in taking and urging others to move forward with bold initiatives and immediate, ambitious steps to curb the impact of greenhouse gases, said Secretary of State John Kerry at a reception for the Arctic Council that he recently hosted in Washington, D.C. The Arctic Council has a responsibility to the people who live in the region. As beautiful as it is not just a picturesque landscape. It's a home. It's a lifestyle, said Secretary of State Kerry. Our priorities include Arctic Ocean safety, security, and stewardship. This includes improving economic and living conditions of the inhabitants of Arctic communities. That is a critical concern, indigenous population, and what development or changes in the environment might do to those folks, said Mr. Kerry.
Over the next years, we're going to focus on the well-being of the indigenous communities, and we're going to take into account that the melting of the ice is now opening up the possibilities of a great deal more commercial traffic, a great deal more tourism, ecotourism or otherwise, and a great deal more shipping, fishing, and commercial operations, particularly possibility of extraction of minerals from the ocean.
We want a region where people can live with hope and optimism for the future, where strong measures are being taken to mitigate environmental harm, where natural resources are managed effectively and sustainably, and where the challenges of economic development and social cohesion are being addressed in a creative, sensitive, responsible way, said Secretary of State Kerry. Above all, we want a region where every stakeholder has a voice and a role in making the idea of one Arctic a reality.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
is for.